DOT punishes three airlines for their roles in a tarmac stranding. The FAA proposes to mandate ice detection. And airline revenue is down 15%. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, November 25th, 2009. It's not exactly a passenger's bill of rights, but the U.S. Department of Transportation is starting off the holiday season with financial penalties to three airlines involved in a lengthy tarmac stranding that didn't need to happen. On August 8th, a Continental Connections flight on ExpressJet was headed from Houston to Minneapolis and was diverted to Rochester, Minnesota due to weather. The plane landed there at 12:30 in the morning. Mesaba Airlines, which was supposed to handle ground service, denied the captain permission to let passengers deplane and wait in the terminal on grounds that there were no TSA screeners on duty. Screeners are not required when passengers can remain in the airport's sterile area. Finally, at 6:15 a.m., 47 hungry, thirsty passengers were allowed to deplane. Just before 9 a.m., they were put back on the plane, which still reeked of overflowing lavatories, and finished their trip. So-called airline contracts of carriage are criticized as not being contracts at all. They're full of weasel words such as should be, shall make an effort, and where possible. In the past, these non-promises have been meaningless. This time, the DOT charged Continental and ExpressJet with unfair and deceptive practices in air transportation for not living up to advertised standards. The airlines will pay $100,000 to settle. Mesaba Airlines, which promised the inbound captain services that were later denied after landing and misrepresented the need for TSA screeners, was also charged with unfair and deceptive practices in air transportation and will pay $75,000. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood commented, quote, "I hope that this sends a signal to the rest of the airline industry that we expect airlines to respect the rights of air travelers. We will also use what we have learned from this investigation to strengthen protections for airline passengers subjected to long tarmac delays," unquote. The DOT is expected to issue a rule by the end of this year requiring airlines to adopt contingency plans for tarmac strandings. Consumer advocates who've expressed low expectations of the DOT may be heartened by the fines in the Rochester case. The FAA is proposing a rule requiring scheduled airlines to either retrofit their existing fleets with ice detection equipment or make sure the ice protection systems are activated at the proper time. For aircraft with an ice detection system, the FAA proposes that the system alert the crew each time it should be activated. The system would either turn on automatically or pilots would manually activate it. For aircraft without ice detection equipment, crews would activate the protection system based on cues listed in their flight manuals during climb and descent and at the first sign of icing when at cruising altitude. The FAA estimates the rule would cost operators about $5.5 million to implement. Operators would have 2 years after the final rule is effective to make the changes. While the rule technically affects 1,866 airplanes, all turbojet airliners and many turboprops covered under the rule already have equipment that satisfies the requirements, and the FAA believes others will be retired before the projected compliance date in 2012. The Air Transport Association of America reports that airline passenger revenue, based on a sample group of carriers, fell 15% in October versus the same month last year. The actual number of passengers was down only 3%, but airline ticket prices are down from the same month last year. ATA President James May blames the economy. Quote, "With U.S. unemployment surpassing 10% in October, these results for air travel demand come as little surprise," unquote. U.S. airlines also saw cargo revenue ton miles decline 3% year over year, 2% domestically and 4% internationally for September of 2009. That marked the 14th consecutive month of declining cargo volumes. Up next on ANN, the FAA is criticized for certifying the Sikorsky S-92. The family of crash victims is suing the FAA and everybody else involved. And a wrongly imprisoned pilot sues the Australian government. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 25th. I'm Paul Plack. The Canadian News Service has released the results of a Freedom of Information Act request related to the March crash near Halifax, Nova Scotia, of a Sikorsky S-92A. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board says studs had broken on an oil filter attached to the main gearbox, resulting in the loss of a large quantity of oil. The engine ran for 10 minutes and 47 seconds after the oil loss. What makes this eyebrow-raising is that FAA certification standards require that gearbox to be capable of running for at least 30 minutes with a total loss of oil. What CNS learned was that in its first certification test, the gearbox failed after only 10 minutes. Sikorsky then added a valve, which requires manual activation by the pilot to divert oil to the gearbox. The FAA and EASA then certified the aircraft. The assumption in that fix is that a loss of oil would be caused by a leak in the oil intercooler, but that's not what happened in March. Sikorsky spokesman Paul Jackson points out the worldwide S-92 fleet has about 185,000 operational hours without any other similar incidents. Retired pilot Per Graham, who conducted tests on the S-92 for Norway, commented to CNS on the patch that got the Hilo certified, quote, "I disagree fully with the FAA for allowing Sikorsky to pass that test on that basis," unquote. The NTSB's investigation continues. The children of a couple killed when a Part Navia P-68 went down short of the Gainesville, Florida airport are suing the FAA for damages in excess of $75,000. The suit, filed in Miami, alleges that a lack of communication between the Gainesville air traffic controllers and charter pilot Andrew Ricciuti were responsible for the crash. The NTSB reported that the aircraft approached the airport too low and hit trees. Gordon and Barbara Taylor had chartered the plane to take them to Gainesville, where Gordon was to have received a kidney transplant. 22-year-old Kyle Taylor and 19-year-old Julia Taylor are the plaintiffs. Keysnet.com reports the suit claims that FAA air traffic controller Clois Strickland didn't provide any weather information for about 30 minutes before clearing Ricciuti to land at 2:45 a.m. Eastern on November 7, 2008. Fog was reported in the vicinity of the airport. The son and daughter have also filed civil claims against the estate of the charter pilot, aircraft owner Robert Valley, and the charter service, Florida Aero Charter. 60-year-old pilot Frederick Martins was tried and convicted by an Australian court for the 2001 sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl in Papua New Guinea, in what the Australian government charged was a case of sex tourism. But the reason Martins was there was because he ran a flying doctor service. He claimed he'd been flying at the time the incident was reported. The Australian Federal Police and the Director of Public Prosecutions responded that no official flight records existed to prove his innocence. He had his passport taken while he was out on bail, denying him the chance to travel back to PNG to gather evidence. He was ultimately convicted and spent almost 3 years in prison. But when Martin's wife went in person to authorities in PNG, not only did she find the records did exist, but she was able to obtain them. Last week, a court of appeals in Queensland, Australia, set aside the conviction and the pilot was released. Martin's is now suing the Australian government for an unspecified sum, but he says he can never be made whole. Quote, "It has cost me the life of my daughter, Stephanie, who died at 6 months old from malaria because I was unable to travel and secure her paperwork to bring her back to Australia for treatment," unquote. Still ahead, Europe sees its first test of jet biofuel. Pilatus sells a PC-12 to the Bureau of Land Management. And the work is done. Now we wait for the FAA. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster, You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, November 25th. I'm Paul Platt. UOP, a subsidiary of Honeywell, announced Monday that its renewable jet fuel process technology was used to convert second-generation renewable feedstocks to green jet fuel for a biofuel demonstration flight by KLM Royal Dutch Airways on Monday. UOP's process was used to convert oil from camelina, an inedible plant, to green jet fuel for the flight. One engine of a Boeing 747 was powered by a fuel mixture consisting of a 50-50 mix of the green jet fuel and traditional petroleum-derived jet fuel. The flight, which was scheduled to take place Monday in Amsterdam, is the first green jet fuel demonstration flight in Europe. UOP's technology was also used to produce jet fuel used in previous test flights conducted in the U.S., Japan, and New Zealand. The technology was developed under a DARPA contract, and UOP claims the fuel actually outperforms petroleum-based jet fuel. Pilatus announced on Monday that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management has taken delivery of its first PC-12. The aircraft will be put into multi-role use performing cargo, passenger, smoke jumper, air tactical, aerial supervision, and lead plane firefighting missions. BLM estimates that owning was cheaper than contracting for a similar aircraft by $1.5 million a year. BLM's multi-role PC-12 features a unique utility door option that's capable of being opened in flight. The inward opening door is mounted within the standard cargo door and enables the aircraft to depressurize, perform specialist parachute work or drop supplies or relief materials, then repressurize and return to high-speed cruise at altitude. Pilatus VP Leonard Luke added, quote, "The PC-12 has become increasingly popular as a cost-effective multi-role solution for government agencies. Strong performance, fuel efficiency, and a rugged airframe make it the ideal special mission platform," unquote. And finally today, owners of aircraft based at Carson City, Nevada, are getting a little frustrated. A $9.6 million runway project realigned runway 927 3 degrees to the north, and the airport remained open through much of that work. But to get the job finished, the runway had to be closed completely earlier this month. Now it's done, all paved and striped, and ready to welcome business jets for the first time. But it can't reopen until the FAA surveys it. Airport manager Casey Pullman says the natives are getting restless over the FAA delay. Quote, "We're in contact with them every day, a few times every day, and all our users and tenants are very anxious," unquote. Well, Casey, don't you fret. I'm sure things will move right along now that we're into the holidays. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, a few minutes with two CEOs, Michi Masafujina of Honda Aircraft and Brent Wouters of Cirrus. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. This Aero Briefing will be taking the holiday weekend off and will return on Monday, November 30th. In the meantime, on Friday, catch our Aero News Touch and Go. It's 2 minutes with all the headlines. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. If you're in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving, and have a clear and unlimited day.